This is Your Calls One Planet series. I'm Rose Aguilar. In May, The Guardian ran a major investigation called Revealed, the carbon bomb set to trigger catastrophic climate breakdown. The investigation found that the world's largest oil and gas companies are planning scores of vast projects that threaten to shatter the 1.5 degrees Celsius climate goal. If governments do not act, these firms will continue to cash in as the world burns. These firms made close to $100 billion in the first quarter of the year. The term carbon bomb has been widely used in climate circles for the past decade to describe large fossil fuel projects or other big sources of carbon. The new research sets a specific definition: projects capable of pumping at least 1 billion tons of CO2 emissions over their lifetimes. Joining us to discuss the consequences of future mega oil and gas projects is Mark Hertzgaard, Executive Director of Covering Climate Now, a global journalism initiative committed to more and better coverage of the climate story. Mark Hertzgaard is the environment correspondent for The Nation and author of Hot: Living Through the Next 50 Years on Earth. Hi, Mark. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Rose. Good to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you, Mark. Before we start off and talk about this carbon bomb piece, I just want to ask you about the profits that oil and gas companies are making. According to The Guardian, they made about $100 billion in the first quarter of this year. Shell made $9 billion in profit, almost three times what it made in the same period last year, while Exxon raked in almost $9 billion. And I just wonder, you know, in every piece about high gas prices, and yes, this is a major story, this piece of the puzzle is usually not included, the fact that these oil companies are making so much money.
We have to remember the oil and gas industry, this is the richest industry in modern history, dating back for 100 years. The tech guys are getting attention in recent years, but oil and gas has been there the longest. They are the richest, and they are the most politically powerful, and those all go together. It's not an accident that we don't hear very much in the news about this, just because it's sort of just taken, I think, as a given that, of course, these companies profit. Of course, they make a lot of money. They're even, if you look in the Guardian piece, and I really hope everyone will read this Guardian piece, Carbon Bombs. It is one of the most important investigative stories on the climate issue in the last 15 years, I would say. But deep in the piece, they quote CEOs from the various companies almost bragging at their calls with shareholders and with stock analysts on Wall Street about just how much cash is rolling in their doors. So the information is certainly there to be reported. And we at Covering Climate Now are urging all of our colleagues throughout the media to be much more assiduous on this aspect of the story.
I just want to ask one more time on this, Mark, because, you know, on NPR, public radio stations, we hear about high gas prices every day. And yet I rarely hear about gas profits. They might do a separate piece on the profits, but it would take just a sentence to say, and by the way, these companies are posting record profits. And as you said, the CEOs are bragging about how much money they're making. Why is it not included on a regular basis?
You know, you'd have to ask the reporters and the editors themselves, but my suspicion is that that would be seen as advocacy. That would be seen as taking an editorial line. And the way that sort of a mainstream newsroom tries to approach that issue is to wait for somebody in politics to make an issue of it. Now, you know, in that regard, the White House has talked about this. There are certain Democrats in Congress who have been pushing legislation, a windfall profits tax. So there are news opportunities for doing that. And I think you're quite right that we, as journalists, we should be pointing this out all the time. I mean, I was driving the other day in the East Bay here in the San Francisco Bay Area, and there's gasoline that's almost up to $7 a gallon, yeah. You know, and that is just money that is coming directly out of consumers' pockets, right into the treasuries of all of these companies who, by the way, are meanwhile planning to scorch the planet.
All right, so let's get into this major investigation, Mark. For people, first off, who are not familiar with the term carbon bomb, can you tell us more about what this means?
Sure. And I want to just emphasize, I was not part of this investigation directly, but The Guardian is the lead media partner in Covering Climate Now. And so this was part of a joint project that The Guardian and Covering Climate Now do called Climate Crimes. And this particular crime has to do with the fact these carbon bombs, these are large oil and gas projects. They can be fracking. It includes fracking, but also includes conventional drilling for oil. And these are 195 projects around the world where if you were to complete that project, and by no means are these projects all certain to happen, people can still stop this, governments can stop this. But if they do come to pass over the course of their lifetime, and most of these projects have about a 30-year lifetime where they are producing oil and selling it out onto the market, each one of those projects would eventually release a billion tons of carbon. Now, by way of comparison, the world as a whole now annually releases about 36 billion tons of carbon. So each one of these 195 projects would do at least a billion. If you put all 195 together all around the world, you essentially destroy any chance of limiting temperature, not just to the 1.5, but even to the 2.0 degree. And, you know, we don't have to wonder too much about what that's going to mean. We only have only, in quotation marks, 1.1 degree of temperature rise so far. And look out the window, folks. You can see it's not pretty even now. So right. If these projects go forward, it essentially shatters any chance of limiting the temperature rise to a level that scientists say is essential to essentially preserving civilization as we know it. These projects also, I want to point out, essentially give the finger to everything that was decided by governments at the last United Nations Climate Conference in Glasgow in November, COP26, where it was agreed again, we are going to keep 1.5 alive. That was the slogan for that conference, keep 1.5 alive. Well, if these 195 projects all come to fruition, there's no way that 1.5 is going to stay alive.
So let's talk details here. As the investigation reports, details of the projects being planned are not easily accessible, but an investigation published shows, and we'll go over that in a minute, but can you just give us some background here, Mark? Why are these kinds of details not easily accessible?
They're not easily accessible to the public, but the data is fairly well known within the industry itself. And The Guardian reporters, Damien Carrington and Matthew Taylor, managed through literally months of investigations to develop sources inside of the industry who then shared this information with them. And the reason that that industry information is around is frankly because Wall Street and other investors want to know, if we're going to put our money into company X or project Y, how much oil is there? How much can it be sold for, et cetera? How easily is it recoverable? All those kinds of things. So you have to have, from an industry perspective, one solid data source, really, on which everyone can base their decisions. And these Guardian reporters managed to get access to that. And not just that, but to other people in the industry. They, as you can imagine, they vetted this legally, this investigation very carefully before they went to press. So that's where they got the data.
So let's, some of their findings, the dozen biggest oil companies are on track to spend $103 million every day for the rest of the decade, $103 million a day for the rest of the decade, exploiting new fields of oil and gas that cannot be burned if global heating is to be limited to well under 2 degrees Celsius.
Right. And one of the most galling parts of this is that we as taxpayers are subsidizing this. It's not just that they're going to spend $103 million a day, but about, I'm estimating here, but 15 to 20% of that is coming out of taxpayers' pockets here in the United States for oil drilling incentives to companies like Exxon and all of these others that, as you mentioned, Rose, they are rolling in money, and yet we are subsidizing that production. It's also worth noting, though, that as much as we often do kick at Exxon and Chevron and BP, a lot of these projects are actually coming from state-owned oil companies in Qatar, in Russia, in Brazil, in other countries. So it's a combination of both private firms and state-owned firms that are pushing all of this production.
Since you brought up subsidies, Mark, this is so important. A conservative estimate from Oil Change International puts the U.S. subsidy total at about $20.5 billion annually, and that includes $14.7 billion in federal subsidies and $5.8 billion in state-level incentives. And this money flows directly from the government, so from taxpayers, to companies to support things like exploration, extraction, and development.
Yes, this is what causes United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres to say that we are literally paying for our own suicide with these subsidies. And he has urged a halt to them globally. And the leaders of the G7 countries, that's the group of seven, the seven richest economies on earth outside of China, they have agreed time and time again that they're going to halt these subsidies, which, by the way, on a global basis, are in the trillions of dollars, according to the International Monetary Fund. They've been agreed over and over that they're going to stop them, and somehow it just never happens. And that, I think, is precisely because of what I mentioned earlier, that you're talking about the industry here that is the richest and most politically powerful over the last 100 years, the oil and gas industry internationally. Now, I don't want to paint them as insuperable, though. They can certainly be defeated, and they are. I think that activism and lawyers and journalists, frankly, and others have made things a lot harder for the oil and gas industry in recent years. They are in many ways on the defensive publicly. Nobody really will speak up for oil companies. Their social license is very damaged. But at the end of the day, they still do have a lock on government policy in many countries, starting with this one. We are a petrostate as well here in the United States. And if you look in Washington, D.C., there is no force that's more powerful, I think, than the oil and gas industry on Capitol Hill, which is why we're not getting climate legislation. They've got a lock on the Republican Party, which has 50 votes to stop any kind of legislation, which then in turn gives, king-making power to Joe Manchin, one Democrat who can stop everything. And people pay a lot of attention to Joe Manchin, but Joe Manchin would not matter if there weren't 50 Republicans in lockstep opposition to any climate action. And that's related to the political power of the oil industry.
Mark Hertzgaard is executive director of Covering Climate Now, a global journalism initiative committed to more and better coverage of the climate story. Mark Hertzgaard is the environment correspondent for The Nation and author of Hot, Living Through the Next 50 Years on Earth. If you have any questions or comments, if you'd like to talk about or have questions about this Guardian piece called Revealed, the Carbon Bomb Set to Trigger Catastrophic Climate Breakdown, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. To your point, Mark, about where this is all going to happen or where it's happening now, the United States is the leading source of emissions from these mega projects. Saudi Arabia is the second biggest potential emitter. And then you've got Russia, Qatar, Iraq, Canada, China, and Brazil. And 60% of these projects have already started pumping. So what we're talking about is happening right now.
In many cases, yes, they have started pumping and the others are in exploration. I will say, though, that I know from talking to the Guardian reporters and Covering Climate Now, I had a Twitter Spaces event with them recently, that this investigation has really shown the power of independent journalism in a way, because it has led to a lot of other journalists around the world and activist groups around the world saying, oh, okay, we're going to go and try to stop the project in our backyard. Hmm. So as we said, there's 195 of these carbon bomb projects around the world. And there is now movement for news organizations in those various regions and activists to begin to, you know, raise the issue locally. A lot of times people aren't even aware that these projects are planned in their state or region, and to press governments and to press these companies. And I think that's really something that we hope all of our journalistic partners will do, to go to the government officials, for one, and say, look, you made a pledge at Glasgow and at Paris before, you're going to limit temperature rise to 1.5. That means these projects cannot go forward. You know, what's the deal? Are you going to stop them or not? And likewise, we should be going to these companies and say, you talk about wanting to be climate responsible citizens, corporate citizens. Well, this does not fit the 1.5 temperature target. How do you justify that? And we should be really turning a spotlight on them. These are not even the projects, Rose, that are already pumping. That doesn't mean they have to continue pumping. And so I think the only way that we're going to salvage a livable planet here is to really stop these projects to the extent that they can be.
Right. The Guardian has a piece, Matthew Taylor wrote about this, environmentalists join forces to fight these carbon bomb fossil fuel projects. So in addition to investigative journalists around the world, including in the global south, you've got environmental lawyers, and they're launching a group to challenge these projects. They met in May, and more than 70 NGOs and activist groups formed around the world a carbon bomb defusal network to share expertise, to let people know, and then, as you say, to hold these companies accountable.
Yeah, I think we also need to remember the environmental movement is not small or weak. It is a major social force internationally and in these various countries. There's no question that, you know, I've been covering the climate story for 30 years now. There has never been the level of public engagement and public criticism and pushback and opposition to this industry that there is today. So I don't want listeners to this program to think, oh, it's all hopeless now. No, you know, believe me, these companies are not happy that these projects are revealed now, because they know perfectly well that this is going to turn up the heat on them, so to speak.
Well, a few people have emailed, you know, what can we do? Given our last segment, Mark, focusing on oil wastewater used to irrigate crops in California, and when a Democrat put up a bill that would have labeled the crop to let people know, it was killed immediately because the oil industry is so powerful in California. Democrats have a supermajority in Sacramento. So given that power, what does work? What kind of activism does work in this space?
People always ask what you can do. And the first thing you can do is to ask that question. So bravo, that's the important first step. And then the second thing is to realize that you as an individual are relatively limited in what you can do. So join with others. That's the second thing. There are plenty of organizations out there already working on this. Join them. Do not reinvent the wheel. Go to Greenpeace, go to the Sierra Club, go to whatever the group is that you feel is closest to you. Oil Change International, you mentioned. The Sunrise Movement, 350.org. There's a lot of groups out there who are fighting this. And in particular, I would urge that you want to be talking, and of course, Fridays for Future, the youth movement that Greta Thunberg is symbolized as. All of these organizations are very, very important. And in particular, you know, we've got elections coming up. It's election day tomorrow here in California. There's elections in November that will determine the control of the United States Congress. Make sure that your activism is focused on politics, because the reason this stuff keeps going forward is that politics allows it. And the only way that politicians will vote differently once they're in office is if they know they can be voted out of office. You've got to vote people out who are doing the wrong thing and vote people in who will do the right thing. It sounds obvious, but it is amazing to me always how many people think that that's not a big part of environmental and climate work. That's pretty important. Now, you know, in different countries, it's different. This advice does not apply, for example, in Saudi Arabia, where it's not a democracy. But here in the United States, that's where our listeners are. Get involved in the fight.
And it's important to note, Mark, as we're talking about November on a pretty regular basis now, and at least before these horrific shootings, we constantly heard in the media that Republicans are definitely going to take the House. You just heard this over and over again. And I just wonder, will the media report on this new House Republican initiative? Inside Climate News reported on this. A new GOP climate plan is long on fossil fuels, short on specifics. One backer referred to the awesomeness and the goodness of the oil and gas industry. An environmentalist called it greenhouse gaslighting.
Right. I think one of the worst examples of media malpractice is how often our colleagues engage in prediction rather than reporting. And when you, as you mentioned, Rose, when they keep saying, oh, the Republicans are going to take the House, the Republicans are going to control the Congress, that is not reporting. That is prediction. That is putting your thumb on the scale. We should not be saying that stuff. Let the voters decide, not journalists who are channeling whatever they've been told by their sources inside the Beltway. So that's the first thing about all that. It always boils me when you hear that kind of it's just because it bakes in the assumption that there's nothing that can be done about this. And that's just simply false. What does have to happen, though, and it's the same as with guns, is that people have to vote the things that matter. And there's a lot of evidence that shows that people care about climate change, people care about gun control, but they don't necessarily vote that way. And so that's, again, get out the vote, get involved with the organizations that are trying to make sure that voters are mobilized, educated, et cetera, and reflecting their true interests.
Mark, and we have about a minute left. President Biden is authorizing the Defense Production Act to spur manufacturing of solar and other forms of clean energy today. But what about the Biden administration on these carbon bombs? Because according to The Guardian, 22 mega projects in the United States account for more than a fifth of potential emissions from these carbon bombs.
Right. We'll see if Biden actually, that's a Reuters story about the solar panels, and we'll see if that actually happens. But if it does, that is still a relative sideshow. It's important for the solar industry, and solar is growing fast. That's terrific. But none of that will matter if these carbon bomb projects go ahead. And so that is where we need the Biden administration, but also Congress to step in here. There's little that he can do directly. No president has the power to go in and say, okay, I'm going to stop that project. But if you were to, and he needs Congress to do this too, if you were to stop those subsidies, if you were to change your public position on those kinds of things, I think it could make a difference. But it's basically it's much more likely that these will be stopped by pressure at the state and local level. And here in California, let's remember, we're a big petroleum producing state. It's not impossible to be pressuring the governor and the legislature to be much, much more aggressive on this stuff.
Mark, before we let you go, what are you working on right now?
Well, Covering Climate Now is preparing, and I'm very happy to say, by the way, the KLW is one of the 500 news outlet partners of Covering Climate Now. We reach a total of 2 billion people around the world with this kind of journalism, and we are preparing later this month for a week of coverage around food and water that is going to look in particular at the growing global food crisis. We have a doubling of people who are desperately hungry around the world, largely because of the Ukraine war combined with climate-driven drought and extremes. And we hope to bring those stories to a large public attention with a week of coverage, June 27 to July 1. So stay tuned for more on that. And I hope KLW will be a big part of it.
We definitely will. Thank you so much, Mark, for joining us. And thanks for your important work.
You bet.
Mark Hertzgard is executive director of Covering Climate Now, environment correspondent for The Nation, and author of Hot, Living Through the Next 50 Years on Earth. And you can find the Guardian piece, Revealed, the Carbon Bomb Set to Trigger Catastrophic Climate Breakdown, at yourcallradio.org. Also, we wanted to draw your attention to this amazing piece that aired on CBS Sunday morning about the role that oceans play in absorbing heat that helps regulate rising temperatures. Really incredible 7-minute piece. It does such a good job of explaining how oceans are affected by climate change and just the important role that ocean plays in our lives. And you can find that at yourcallradio.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.